glory, his divine story, every Thursday on Morning Glory. Catch the vibe with me, Karuna Munshi, on Radio Size Thursday Live on Asia Stream at 9:40 a.m.
Tune into Sai.
Spend the day with Sai.
From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m. on Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Om Shri Sai Ram. With much love and deep gratitude, I offer myself at the lotus feet of my personal hero, my role model, my love, my life, my Sadguru and my God, Bhagwan Shri Satya Sai Baba. Life with Sai is a blissful journey with a clear goal and easy milestones to navigate our way around. And for this divine GPS in my life, I bow to the glory of Sai in awe and in wonder, with reverence and respect, and with my undying gratitude. Good morning and Sai Ram, dear listeners. Welcome to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. My name is Karuna and you're tuned to Radio Size Asia Stream, coming to you live from Prashanti Nilayam, India, the spiritual capital of the universe. Today is Thursday, the 13th of April, 2017, and the current temperature in the Divine Valley is a balmy 33 degrees Celsius. The mercury is expected to rise to 40 degrees Celsius later in the afternoon. Overnight lows are in the mid-20s these days. We are barely 11 days away from the most poignant day in the Sai calendar, the Aradhana Day, or our Remembrance Day. Dear sisters and brothers, it is our moment of truth that we are approaching. And now is the perfect time for sincere introspection. If you recall, in the year 2011, around this time, all of us, that is millions of us, were praying fervently to the one miraculous God in our lives to work a miracle on his own health and heal his ailing body for us, for our sake and for our joy. Our fear of losing our Lord united all of us in sorrow. With bated breaths, we waited each day for the medical bulletin from the Sri Satya Sai Super Speciality Hospital here, just for that one update on Bhagwan's health. Then, on April 24th, he chose to ascend from the form to the formless. We thought the universe had crashed on us. For many of us, there was nothing to live for. So much sorrow, such confusion, deep sadness, anguish, angst, and that most painful pain, that knowing feeling at the bottom of the chest cavity. 6 years later, as we look back, we have all handled this loss differently. For many of us, it has led to a quantum jump in our relationship with Bhagwan and in our understanding of his teachings. Many have actually and finally realized the truth of Swami's divine words, that he never was the form but the universal consciousness that had assumed that lovely avatar to give us the opportunity to connect with him. Howard Murfitt, the Australian journalist and the author of several books on Bhagwan Baba, including The Very Famous Man of Miracles, had asked Baba a pertinent question. He asked Swami, if indeed he was the incarnation of Shirdi Sai Baba, where was he during the 8 years between the two avatars? As we know, Shirdi Baba left the body in 1918 and Satya Sai Baba was born in 1926. Mr. Murfitt wanted to know what transpired during the intervening 8 years. To that question from Mr. Howard Murfitt, Baba replied that after shedding the form of Shirdi Sai Baba and till the time he assumed the form of Ishwaramba's little Satya, he had resumed being the universal consciousness and was present everywhere. Nearly 6 years have passed since the day Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba left the form that we were all so attached to, and since he has resumed himself as the universal consciousness. And when we look back, what a test of faith and understanding of his teachings this period has been. Today many testify to experiencing Him in every breath, in their prayers, in their moments of stillness, in their inner sky. Others find Him so omnipresent as the universal consciousness or as the resident of their hearts that they find Him eavesdropping on their every thought that they almost forget that He has left the body. That group would include yours truly. I find His responses to my internal dialogue so live wire. I think of an issue, Swami presents the solution. I'm caught up in a dilemma and He explains it to me why it is so. I experience Him in the studio at all times, the studio from where I'm coming live to you right now. His chair is placed here where He had sat in person and He's omnipresent here at all times. And I completely realize the fact that my experience is not unique. Every Sai devotee can resonate with it, I'm sure. Surprisingly, for most of us slow learners, it is only now that we are realizing the true meaning of His teachings. When He said that we are all divine beings having a human experience. That He is always with us, in us, above us, below us and around us. And that He is us. Even if this is a fleeting experience, our separation from His form has forced it upon us. Clearly, pain does teach us our most profound lessons sometimes. During the current period of giving and forgiving which is taking place in Bharat and around the world, the offering of love and adoration of Satya Sai is being observed for 40 days. That is, from 22nd of March up until the end of April, 30th April 2017. This 40 days of intense spiritual practices include or conclude worldwide with the celebration of the World Human Values Day on 24th of April. In His name and in His honor, as their tribute, devotees around the world, devotees around India are engaging in so many acts of kindness and spiritual discipline and community service because that is what Bhagavan taught us. On Morning Glory and on Thursday Live, we are offering you many exclusive programs including our exclusive series, Reflection and Reverie with Mr. V. Srinivasan. This is a small token of our love at the lotus feet. Dear listeners, today you can hear part 3 of this ongoing conversation. This will be followed by part 3 of Fleeting Moments with Mr. Naveen Patel of the United Kingdom. Over now to part 3 of Reflection and Reverie with Mr. V. Srinivasan. This conversation was recorded on the 9th of January 2017 at the Radio Sai Studios in Sundaram in Chennai. And here it is for your listening pleasure.
Yes, in 1978, the school at Uti was inaugurated and Swami had been going there from 1976. And 1981 was the inauguration of Sundaram, as I said. And that summer, Bhagavan had gone to Uti. So, I was with him. And there was no talk of Kodaikanal at all. In the past, I had told him about Kodaikanal. And he also asked about Kodaikanal. He had been there in 1967, along with Mr. Venkatamuni and all that. Venkatamuni died in Kodaikanal. Actually, he passed away with his head in Swami's lap.
What a nice way to go, my God.
A blessed passing.
Totally.
So this was 1981 summer. Vidya had gone to Kodaikanal with the children. We had this little house there. It was a 100-year-old house, which I had bought in 1973 from the missionaries. And usually that in those days, every summer, Vidya would go to Kodaikanal as soon as the school vacation was on, go with the children, and that was the routine. And usually she used to stay for about a month. And finally she had closed the house because next day they were planning to get back to Chennai. That morning, Swami called me and said, "Tomorrow we'll go to your house in Kodaikanal." I was struck dumb. First, I couldn't exactly comprehend what this meant. And at that time, there were no cell phones. You had to book a trunk call and wait.
Through an operator.
Exactly. So, I tried and from Uti to Kodaikanal, it was almost impossible to get through. Finally, Late in the afternoon, I got through and told Vidya, Swami is coming tomorrow. She couldn't believe it. She said, are you sure? Are you joking? I said, no, Swami told me that he's coming tomorrow to Kodaikanal. So, she was thrilled. But she had closed the house, pulled out all the curtains, everything bad, everything like that. And to top it all, my son Murli was running high fever. So, she had now less than a day to get ready for Swami. So, what she did, everybody got busy there, Vidya, Murli and the few servants who were there. And then she ran to the Spencer's shop, which had closed. It was past 7 o'clock. She knew the manager. He opened it and got a new mattress and a cot for Bhagwan. So it came late in the night. And they worked through the night, putting the house in order to the extent that was possible. Those even with Swami, they were not very sure because none of them had come to see my house at Kodaikanal. This house is an old house, which is similar to what you see in the hill stations. Mm-hmm. It had 3 bedrooms. Only 2 of them could be said to be reasonable size. One was a very, very small bedroom. And one good thing was that all of them had attached bathrooms. So, we did the best we can. And then we left from Ooty. We didn't realize that by road, because you have to come down from Ooty to Metropalayam and drive to Coimbatore and then go towards Palani and then start
the ascent
to Dindigul and go climb the Kodaikanal hills, the Palani hills.
Yeah.
I was with Swami at that time. We reached the house at about 5:30 in the evening. And Vidya was waiting there with the aarti ready. And again, Swami said memorable words, which is very fresh in our memory.
Mm-hmm.
What Swami said was, as soon as he got down from the car, Na nane vandrikin, says, I have come myself.
Mm-hmm.
The implication was that I have not invited him.
On my own I have come.
Yes, on my own I have
own
come.
Volition.
Na nane vandirikken. So, I mean, it was something wonderful for him to say that out of his love he has come.
Mm.
Then came inside the house and seemed quite comfortable. And he didn't say anything that was small or anything like that. And he went to the central room, which was supposed to be the biggest room, with a dressing room and a bathroom that was given to him. The people who came at that time was Swami and Radha Krishna, C. Srinivas, and I think it was Bhaskar Rao from West Godavari, and his wife Vasumati, who's in the canteen.
South Indian canteen in charge.
And Jogarao and Mrs. Ratanlal. So, Swami had one room. So, Vasumati and Mrs. Ratanlal had one room to themselves. Mm. And Bhaskar Rao and
Jogarao
were in the small little room. And Swami and Radha Krishna were in that one room.
Where were you and Auntie Vidya?
That's what I'm coming to. There was a little servant's room where we all went and stayed. And we slept there. We didn't mention this to Swami at all. And that night passed, and in the morning, Swami as usual came out and wanted to explore the house. And then he inquired where we were staying. When I showed him the small room, he got so angry. He said, no, this is very bad. Why have you done like this and all that? Then I know he reached a decision right then, what he wanted to be done. But he stayed with us for almost a week at that time. And there was a central drawing room which had a fireplace. And Swami loved the fireplace.
Really?
He used to sit by the
wood-burning fireplace.
Wood-burning fireplace. Mm. Swami would sit there every evening. And in those days, with me, there were 3 Sevadal who were very close with me at that time. One was who is still with me now, even though he now has no position in the organization as such, but very attached to me is a boy called Venkatesh. And then there was a chap called Narsimhan, who was an engineer. And there was another person called Purushottam, who used to work in the Reserve Bank. So the three of them were there who had come to attend on. There were no other seva, there was nothing. And during that first visit, hardly there used to be 15 devotees who came for darshan. Nobody knew at that time. And
they didn't know about Swami being in Kodai or about his...
Both. They didn't know about his being in Kodai and they didn't know much about him to come for...
So where were darshans held in your front lawn?
On the front driveway.
Okay.
That was where the morning darshan used to take place.
So informal and beautiful.
Yes.
Sounds nice.
And Swami was so much at home and so happy, and everybody who got a chance to come then received so much grace from him at that time. And then in the evenings, only the family members used to sing the bhajans. There was no bhajan group, no bhajan troop as such. And there was a joke which Swami made, because this old house had these antique doors, which when you open, they creak. They'll go make a creaking sound every time you open and close. So Swami used to say, in Srinivasan's house, not only the humans sing, the doors also sing. All that. So, it was wonderful in those days. And that's when, every evening, we used to have the fireside session. With the fire burning, Swami sitting in a sofa. Then he would talk. And then he would discourse in Tamil, because I didn't know Telugu, and he would talk in Tamil. And he was so loving to everybody. In fact, we had an old couple who were the caretakers in the house. The wife's name was Lakshmi. Swami used to be very kind towards her. He used to call her Lachumi. And he will call out to her, "Hey, Lachumi! Eppadi irukke?" That means, "How are you?" And even in later years, every year, he would give her a sari. Even after moving to Sai Shruti, he would give me a sari to give to Lachumi on that. And these were people, you know, who had no previous knowledge, but it must be some of their past punyas which gave them that benefit. At almost the end of the visit, you know, we had land. It was a 1-acre site. And it was a sloping hillside on one side. So Swami said, build one guest house there. So we started there to put a guest house there. And the next year he came again. Stayed in the old house while that guest house was getting ready. And then he saw that it was having only a ground floor. And in fact, all the scaffolding and shuttering was already in place to cast the roof for that. He said, "No, I think you should build a first floor also." So we said, "Yes, Swami," and the entire shuttering was removed and the next floor was put up. So that was made ready the following year. Then when Swami came, he moved into that new house. There were four rooms. All double rooms, all with attached baths, and there was a beautiful room for Swami with a balcony from which he would give darshan. And that new house from the driveway, you had to climb a few steps. It was at an elevated position. So Swami and his party, most of them, except Mrs. Ratanal, she would like to stay in the old house because the kitchen was in the old house. So every day, Swami would walk down from the new house and come all the way to the old house and have his food meals there, breakfast, lunch and dinner, and then walk back to his quarters. So one year we had this Belgian Rani, you know, the Rani of Belgium had a party, and 2-3 years he brought various people. I used to stay upstairs across Swami's room in one room. So that's where I stood, so that I was available in any case anything was wanted on there. So Swami stayed with us that way in the new house, and this had one great advantage, that the evening bhajans, Swami would come out of the new house and sit at the place on the top of the steps, and behind him was the western side, and all the people would be sitting in the front on the driveway. By that time there were quite large crowds, so it used to become a very fairly crowded thing at that time. But the most wonderful thing was that as the bhajan was moving towards its finale, the sun would be setting.
In the background,
right behind Swami. And it would be a ball of fire behind Swami's head. So it was like an enormous aura of flame behind Swami's head. That was a darshan which you could never imagine. So everybody was in raptures at that time. And that's how, you know, evening bhajans were very, very popular at that time. Swami used to love to go on picnics, and he would tell me to go and identify the site and deep in the woods. And Swami would walk down, come down the landside and sit down. He used to sit sometimes on a broken tree which had fallen down. He would sit on this tree and we would have our sessions. In fact, one place we also played a game, passing the pack, you know, where you pass the ball.
Parcel, yeah.
And the bhajan stops, that person is it.
Okay.
And Swami played with us.
Oh, did he become it at any time? Clever. He used his godly powers.
Those kind of things, it was wonderful. And that year he told us something, enjoy these days, they will never come back. This was what he said, you know, that each day is precious, and enjoy them, remember them, cherish them. They will never come back. Then he told me something which I was completely fooled by what he said. He said, you know, this his old devotee from 1967, a person called Narsimhachari, had given him a plot of land near the lake. But Swami didn't go there all these years. And Narsimhachari used to come here to have darshan of Swami. So then Swami said, you know, I want to bring Rajmata here. So we have to build a proper guest house for her. I took that literally. And we built a building which was supposed to be Swami's guest house. And then that year Swami came, I think it was 1986, that 1986 was when Swami came there at that time, and he stayed one night in our place and told us that evening that next day he is moving to this guest house. So we were shattered. Is it Swami, you said it's guest house? No, I think it is better I stay this place. Too many devotees are coming now. I mean, he was consoling us. That was the day we was totally, our whole family was shattered that Swami was leaving our place and moving.
And how far was this new guest house from?
It was about 4 kilometers.
Oh, quite a distance in the hills.
And one thing, this was on the lakeside. And this is Sai Shruti. So this guest house, built as a guest house, became Sai Shruti.
Rajmata was just a...
Only a sort of an excuse to get this built. So those were the wonderful years in the old house. People were wondering, how come this old 100-year-old house? Swami said, old is gold. This house had very spiritual people living in it in the past. It's a very spiritual place. The missionaries and all who...
So the nuns used to live from Church of South
India? I think they were all Irish. But they were mostly, I think, men, not...
I see.
But they were missionaries, and finally they sold that property. That was when I got it, 1973. So that is the transition from Sai Kripa, as my house was called, to Sai Shruti in Kodaikanal. And that was from the year 82 onwards. And in 83, there was what was supposed to be the famous Chicago trip and which you have heard that experience. Swami was in the old Vrindavan at that time, and it was January, and he was due to come to Chennai also, as usual. So, sometime in the afternoon, when we had our tea, he said, because I had to go suddenly to make a very short trip to Chicago, and I had some urgent business. So I said, Swami, I have a day's work, I'll go, and I'll come back, I'll be there in Chennai when you come there. So he gave me permission, and then didn't say anything further. But then just as he came out, after the darshan in the evening, and he was going after dinner, I just took namaskar from him. He said, on your way back, you stop in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. Use Malaysia, he didn't say Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia, and see so and so. I said, yes, Swami, it's on the way, I can stop. Then I was waiting for him to say why and what for and what I am to say to that person. He didn't say, he just went into his room and locked the door. I was flabbergasted. Here I am going to Malaysia to meet somebody.
Without a message, no agenda.
Without knowing what for. So I did. I went to Chicago and finished my work and called this guy from Chicago saying, he was person, Swami's devotee, and I knew him, and he knew me. So I said, I'm coming tomorrow. And I was surprised at his very gruff tone. Why are you coming? I mean, one would not expect a friend to ask, why are you coming? I said, I'll tell you when I come. I didn't want to tell him, I don't know why I'm coming. So he banged the phone down and said, car will come to airport. So from Chicago to 14-hour flight in those days, Hong Kong, Hawaii, Hong Kong, and then we land in Kuala Lumpur late in the night. And then as I come out of the airport, I see a Rolls-Royce cars come with this guy. And it was not a very pleasant welcome.
He came personally to
you? Yeah, he came. No word of welcome, nothing. We just come, get into the car. We got into the car. As soon as it started moving, he said, why have you come? I said, I don't know. I'll talk to you after we go home or go to your place. So we reached his palatial house. We go into the drawing room. He sends all his servants out. Doesn't even offer me a glass of water. No, nothing, no food, no inquiry whether you had dinner or anything like that. And then, now tell me why you have come. I said that Swami asked me to come and see you, but didn't tell me what for and why. And he said, are you a fool? Not to know why and what you are supposed to do? Are you, these are the words, he said, are you a fool? He's telling me. Very, very rough. I said, honestly, I don't know why. He only asked me to come and see you. After that, he didn't give me any instructions. So, this fellow lapses into silence. I am also sitting silently, exhausted after this long trip from Chicago, all the way across the Pacific, down into Malaysia. Then, after some time, he looks at me and reaches down into his shoe and pulls out something. And shows me, he said, do you know what this is? I said, it's a revolver. Don't point it at me. So, he still kept it like that. Then I said, perhaps this fellow's mad. My end has come. So I started mentally saying, Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram, Sai Ram. And then, slowly he said, today I was going to shoot myself. And that is why Swami has asked you to come. That is the reason you have come. He's telling me, the reason why I have come, I was going to kill myself. And slowly he started telling all his story, all his problems. It poured out from him on that. And he had got into a lot of business difficulties. And he was going to get into serious, and he couldn't face the ignominy on that. So he had decided to end his life. And I told him, look, Swami is coming next week to Chennai. You come there. He agreed.
Mm.
Then he gave me breakfast. After breakfast, we immediately went back to the airport to catch this flight to Chennai. So, within 5 days, Swami was in Chennai and we didn't talk about this trip at all. He never asked me. Next day, I see this fellow has come. So, I said, Swami, so-and-so has come. Swami ignores. Like that, in 2 days, this fellow is totally ignored.
Mm-hmm.
Third day, Swami says to me, I'm calling that man, whatever I say, you have to say.
Like translate?
Yes.
Okay.
You have to say whatever I say.
Mm.
I said, yes, Swami. So the fellow was called into the interview room, downstairs, in that room, in front. And Swami gives it to him left, right and center. He says, you're a dog. You're an ungrateful person. You're a wretch. I am flabbergasted.
You have to translate all this.
I tried to polish it a bit. Swami turned to me and his eyes were blowing fire. He said, you are a loudspeaker. That's all you are. You have to faithfully say what I am saying. So then I gave it to him literally. The fellow broke down. Total tears, he dissolved. And he started sobbing and crying and all that. This went on for quite some time. Then finally he caught hold of Swami's feet. And then Swami cooled down and consoled him on that, just patted him on that. He said, Swami, I don't know what to do. I am in so much difficulty. The fellow had not, you know, all the rings and all which Swami had given, he had taken it off. Because he was going to some Buddhist priest.
Mm-hmm.
And he had put away all the protection which Swami had given to him.
Mm-hmm.
Then Swami told him, blessed him, like everything will be all right. And then this fellow left. And after 6 months or so, he called me one day and said, all my problems have been solved. From some unexpected source, people have turned up to buy my properties, which they were not willing to buy. And he has been saved. So here is an incident where I am used as an instrument.
Mm.
Many of us are used as instruments. And the moral was, you need not know why, you are just an instrument.
Go with the flow.
Go with the flow, but do faithfully what Swami asks you to do.
Mm.
Don't think, plan, how it is to be, what will have effect, what is wrong with it, all that, don't think about that.
Mm.
And this was a clear demonstration. See, all these years, I was learning by experience through various incidents with Swami. Things which I never knew before. And it was an unbelievable experience which is still fresh in my memory. I must tell you about one other incident. You know, Swami has times when he is upset with somebody. And for some reason, I don't know if you remember, there was 1 year, he never went to Vrindavan.
Yes. One summer.
He was, I think something had upset him about the behavior of the boys or something. So he one day told Radha Krishna that we'll leave for Kodaikanal tomorrow. And then Radha Krishna came and told me, we are going to Kodaikanal tomorrow morning. He said, all right. I thought Swami is going, we'll go to Bangalore, then we'll have a break there, then we'll go from there slowly. It turns out that Swami has decided to drive non-stop from Puttaparthi to Kodaikanal.
Wow. It's a long drive through so many states.
Unbelievable. And only the people in the car are myself, Radha Krishna and Swami. And Swami wouldn't stop anywhere. So what used to happen is, Radha Krishna would drive for a few hours, then he would sit on the side, I would drive. So alternately we drove, we used to eat in the car, and no stopping anywhere.
So nobody was informed, you could not make a phone call, nothing?
Nothing. Of course, people had, you know, the wireless is there. People in Bangalore got ready that Swami is coming.
Uh-huh.
Never went into Whitefield. Then they don't know where he's going. Then people along the Tamil Nadu, they're going to Ooty. They got ready. People on the way to Kodaikanal, they got ready. So somewhere on the road, people started to know Swami's car is coming. It was not the usual paraphernalia which used to happen. So finally we reached Kodaikanal after I think almost 16 hours after having left Puttaparthi. And this was another incident, you know, where of Swami's sankalpa. I won't call it a leela, it is a sankalpa, his will. And we do not know why. And that was in the year 1983. See, these are very eventful years. In 1983, I think you must have remembered, there was an international Balvikas rally in the stadium.
Hillview Stadium.
And that was all coordinated by Vidya.
Hmm.
So, Swami was very happy. It was called the Cosmos.
Hmm.
With all the planets, you know, circling around and finally paying their obeisance to Bhagwan. There's a joke, there's an amusing incident there that my second son Narayan was Saturn.
Planet Saturn.
Planet Saturn.
So he was sitting inside the big ball?
Yes, inside that. What happened? There was a lizard inside the that Saturn model. And he was very wriggling about all the time. But nothing happened. And Swami was very happy with that rally. In fact, I think they did it again in Bombay, but they wanted to do it again in Puttaparthi. In 1984, as you know, we had the inauguration of the new building, Trayi Brindavan,
mm-hmm.
where Swami had told what exists today. There, of course, I didn't have the same kind of spiritual experience which I had in the old building, which I spoke about, you know, to see Swami's aura. But it has its own ambience on that.
So they demolished the old bungalow?
Yeah,
completely.
Totally.
Raised it to ground.
They totally demolished it and built a new one. It's very well set up, and then there was an annex built and with a bridge connecting the old Trayi Brindavan to the annex where Swami's dining facilities were located on that. It exists today also, and the bhajan hall has got a lot of vibrations. If you go there, you will feel very powerful on that. Another amusing incident was in 1985 that a devotee had donated to Swami a new Benz car.
Dark green in color, wasn't it?
Exactly.
Yes,
you remember that?
Yeah, very well, yeah.
Yes, that was the one, it's the green Benz.
Mm.
And it was the anniversary of Trayi Brindavan that it landed in Chennai. I mean, it was landed the previous day, but then we completed the customs formalities. It came out in the forenoon of the anniversary day. And that was the day when in the evening there would be the bhajan. So we set out from here, the driver and myself, to go to Bangalore. At 1 o'clock in the afternoon. Unbelievably, which I don't think even on an F1 track has been done, we reached Brindavan in 3.5 hours.
Wow.
Which even today...
You can't do the... With all better roads and
highways.
Yeah,
the better roads and all that.
Mm.
Then there was a single road, no multi-lane...
And no highway.
Nothing, no highway.
It's a bad road, yeah.
But not so much traffic. And I still remember we reached Brindavan as bhajan was going on. And a new car came to Swami on the anniversary of Trayi Brindavan. It was something wonderful. And I don't think that we drove rashly. I mean, we did drive fast, but it was not as if we were cutting corners. I don't know whether it was some super force which whiffed us along or what, but we did reach at before 5, we were at Trayi Brindavan on that year.
From the sound of it, you were so involved and you were so available for Swami's work at the peak of your own career. How did you manage? When did you work? When did you manage family time? And how were you able to do all this?
How did I manage my professional commitments?
Mm-hmm. With and family life, when you were so involved.
Family life and... with Swami. Swami never told me directly that he wanted me to come and stay in Puttaparthi. But I heard from others that Swami would like you to be at Puttaparthi. And this was something I could not do with all my other commitments. Then I plainly talked with Swami. Swami, I want to give up all my business commitments on them. And he did not agree. He said, no, you have to remain as the chairman of the group. You should not give it up. And I mean, it was a direct instruction from him to me, in spite of what I heard from
others. So conflicting, right?
Conflicting, or of course, usually Swami has done this several times that he says different things to different people. But what I started to do was, gradually I started to step back from my business commitments, assuming less of an executive responsibility and not involved in day-to-day implementation, and gradually allowing my sons to take in a more important role, involvement in that. I think I can say that last 25 years, I have not really been involved in my business, though I remained as chairman, as what Swami had, and I was mostly concentrating on Swami's work. He did not find fault with me for doing that, because I was observing his dictum and directive to remain as the
chairman
of the group. So this was how, you know, you could see that some way I was able to manage both on this. It was only because of Swami's grace on that.
Sai Ram, and welcome back to Morning Glory on Thursday Live. You're tuned to Radio Sai's Asia Stream, and we are coming to you live from Prashanthi Nilayam, India, the abode of supreme peace. The time in the ashram right now is exactly 22 minutes past 10 a.m., that is Indian Standard Time, and today is the 13th day of April 2017. The current temperature in the Divine Valley is 34 degrees Celsius. You just heard part 3 of Reflection and Reverie with Mr. V. Srinivasan. Today, he took us down memory lane to the early days of his association with Baba, including Bhagwan's memorable and surprise trip to Kodaikanal to the Srinivasan residence and the dramatic story of the mysterious trip to Malaysia at the Divine Command. Dear listeners, I hope you're enjoying this series of conversation. We look forward to your feedback at listener@radiosai.org. And now, I leave you to enjoy part 3 of Fleeting Moments with Mr. Naveen Patel of the United Kingdom. He is in conversation with my colleague, Mr. Bishu Prushti. Please have a Saisam day ahead. Today, the festival of Baisakhi is being celebrated in North India. So, Baisakhi greetings to all our listeners from Prashanthi Nilayam. And finally, a friendly reminder, do remember to send us your feedback to Fleeting Moments with Mr. Naveen Patel and to Reflection and Reverie with Mr. V. Srinivasan or any other Radio Sai programs. Our email ID remains listener@radiosai.org. Thank you for your company and Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram, dear listeners, and welcome to Fleeting Moments, Lasting Memories, our series of conversations with former students of Bhagwan's educational institutions. By Bhagwan's grace, we are continuing the discussion, the beautiful conversation with Brother Naveen Patel. In this episode, Brother Naveen Patel belongs to the very first batch of students who joined Bhagwan's hostel. Swami started the Vrindavan campus in 1969. In 1970, Bhagwan started the hostel in Vrindavan, and there were 12 students who were the first occupants of Bhagwan's little hostel, and Brother Naveen Patel belongs to that privileged group of 12, the 12 apostles of Satya Sai in the era, in the bygone era. And Brother Naveen, in the previous episode, narrated the beautiful instances about Bhagwan's visit to Africa, how Bhagwan spotted him, picked him, and ensured that there is a transformation in his heart, and his life definitely took a very different turn, something that he had never ever expected, but something that became fascinating as time went by. and someone who always wanted to become a doctor studying in London came to Vrindavan and became a student in Bhagwan's hostel. Before I go on, just for those of you who are not familiar with the previous episode and with the background of Brother Naveen, after doing his PUC, that is the pre-university course in Bhagwan's college, he went on to do his bachelor's in sciences, studying chemistry, biology and zoology. And after that, in 1974, Bhagwan asked him to move to UK and help the Sri Sathya Sai organization in United Kingdom. So he was the secretary of the Sathya Sai organization there, and he was the Seva coordinator in Leicester. He became the regional chair of Sathya Sai International Organization Region 4. He went on to be the national spiritual coordinator, and later on he passed on the baton to his brother Kiran Patel, who also belongs to the early batches of Bhagwan's University. And Brother Kiran Patel actually spearheaded the Sathya Sai organization in UK. He was a chairperson for almost 5 years after 2011. And Kiran Patel, brother, continued to be in the organization. He continues to mentor and guide the youth and the devotees there in UK, because he's one of those very experienced persons, an alumni, as well as someone who has spent all his time, energy, resources in building the Sathya Sai organization. Professionally, he's a biochemist and he works for University Hospitals of Leicester. He has retired, but the hospital does not want to leave him, so he continues to work at least 2 days a week just to not displease his former employers, because they really want his services, they want his experience, they want his diligence, they want his character. So with prayers to Bhagwan, we continue this beautiful conversation with Brother Naveen Patel. Welcome once again, brother, to Fleeting Moments.
Thank you very much. Dear brother and sisters of the Sai family, it's been a wonderful experience sharing my experiences with everybody. And perhaps as later on in life, Bhagwan did tell us or direct us to go into public and speak about the experiences that we've had with Bhagwan to be narrated to the general public. Because Swami himself said that many devotees crave to come to Prashanthi Nilayam, but not all of them can come here for whatever reason it may be. But if you, who are my beacons, can take that love that I shared with you to them, they will feel part of that love. So dear brothers and sisters, this is how my life carries on. In the previous episode, I did speak about my life in Uganda and in Kampala, to be specific. And one of the things, the first experience that I had with Bhagwan was when Swami, early hours of the morning, came out and gave me the darshan while I was doing the pattern, the flower bed for Swami to walk on. That time, I did say that Swami took a 360 degrees turn. And to me, this is my personal interpretation as such, to me, that was perhaps the change in my fate. Perhaps if Swami had not done that, perhaps my life would have been different. And because of that turning, perhaps that signifies that my life had been turned around by Bhagwan. My fate had been turned around by Bhagwan. So from there onwards, we continue with where I left off previously, Swami literally said, "I'll see what I can do." As if the Almighty God cannot do what He wants, what He wills, He can do anything. This is from later in life, with experiences that I've had with Swami, and based on that, that with firm conviction I can say, Swami, Sri Sathya Sai Baba, is God Himself. And He, what He wills, He can do. And that I experienced it later in life, which I shall narrate shortly. So once the college started, I was allowed to join the college. Even though our degree, our education from East Africa was equivalent to entry level in the degree courses, the Bangalore University at that time didn't have proper equivalence of my education in East Africa, and they said that I'll have to join PUC. So to me, that didn't matter, because my purpose of coming to India was basically to stay close to Swami, as close as possible. That was my idea. Education was secondary to me. My primary goal was to stay very close to Swami and spend my life with Swami. That is how I viewed it at that time. So, I accepted what was given to me. The first, that time the PUC was only 1 year. The pre-university entrance was 1 year only. And later on, after my year, it became 2 years, I believe. And it's continued as 2 years. But after completing that first year, no doubt, I passed that. And the certificates came to Swami. So I handed it over to Swami. And we were asked to make a choice what we were going to study further for our degree level. Some students selected BSc, some selected BA, some selected BCom, etc. Because by now, the Whitefield campus, the Sisati Sai College of Arts and Science at Brindavan, had all these courses available for the undergraduates. And also, the BA had now grown further up, and MA was offered as a master degree. BA and then MA, that's how it came up. But the undergraduate courses were BSc, BA of course, and BCom. So I handed it over to Swami, and Swami says, without me asking Swami what I'm going to do, or I want to study this thing, Swami said, you, Navin, you are going to study BSc, chemistry, botany, and zoology. Yes, sir. That was all you can say. Get on with it. Just before that, let me tell you, just slightly digressing. You may wonder that, you know, I dropped going to England and then chose to stay in India to study in Swami's college. So what happened to my education about medicine and all that?
Your dreams of becoming a doctor.
Yes. Anybody can question that. Yes. What happened was, one day, those days, always Swami has had very high dignitaries from the government and elsewhere. And one of the Swami's devotees was a union minister called T.A. Pai. Now, T.A. Pai was, I think, the chairman or the director of Manipal Medical School, that is in Karnataka. Swami had spoken to him, saying, you have to admit this boy. And, of course, when Swami has instructed somebody, it has to happen. So, Swami then later on said to me, okay, you go to Manipal. There is a bus that is leaving in the evening. Take that bus to Manipal, and you get enrolled in medical school in Manipal.
This is before Swami asked you to do BSc?
That's right.
Okay.
So I went to Bangalore onto this bus that was going to Manipal, and somewhere halfway through, I started getting these thoughts in my mind. Here is beautiful Bhagwan giving me all this love. I am getting away from Bhagwan. I'm going to Manipal, going away from the Bhagwan's institution and Bhagwan's physical form. I could have done medicine in UK, and yet I'm trying to go to Manipal Medical School. Why? I could have done that in UK, going away from Swami if that was the choice. I reached Manipal. I reached the gates of Manipal Medical School and I turned around. Felt that wasn't the right place for me. Mm-hmm. I returned by the returning bus straight back to Bangalore and came to Swami. So what happened? Swami asked me. Swami, I didn't feel like right. I've come back. I don't want to go there. So, but I made a provision for you to go there. No, Swami, I'm happy where you have put me. And as the life goes on, the Swami then asks me to do BSc.
So Swami was happy that you came back.
Oh, Swami was elated.
Hmm.
But I think indirectly he did say that this boy is going to come back. He did say this to Rama Brahmam.
Oh, is it?
Rama Brahmam is one of those Hanumans, I must say. Wonderful personality. He later on, Rama Brahmam did say that, Swami did say, this boy is going to come back.
Mm-hmm.
He's not going to stay there. Because he has seen the love.
And I think that's the very beautiful thing about Bhagwan is, whatever he asks us to follow, he wants to ensure that it becomes our choice.
Yes.
It is not something that is forced upon us.
No.
Even though this is something good for us, even though it is his direction, he waits for the time till it becomes something that comes from the source within.
Yes.
So that then we are convinced to follow. So now, you know, there could have been a situation where you could have felt that, you know, I could have studied medicine, I could have become a doctor.
Yes.
But now Swami created that opportunity where you made that choice.
Yes.
That, no, I don't want to go there. I want to be with Swami. So never again you will think that, you know,
no.
Never again will you regret that decision.
No, definitely not. This brings me to a point where I should say that Swami is our Swami, Satya Sai Baba, is one of the most flexible person, if I could, it's not the right word, but I have to use some sort of a word here. He's most flexible Swami you could ever see, meet. I'm coming back to the hostel days. When the hostel started, as Prusti has already just stated, that we started with a hostel with only 12 boys. Swami took a piece of paper, sat on this broken table and started writing these 12 names. Top, number 1, Naveen, number 2, Anup Shah, number 3, Chaitanya, number 4, Satish, etc. Went to about 12 names there. And that list, I've got it somewhere in my files. Those names were given to me. It says, you take charge of it. So, right from day 1, Swami has given the full charge to us students without putting an elderly person or a warden in charge of the hostel. Swami's view, he himself very clearly stated, I don't want any wardens to look over you. I want yourself, you people are old enough to take responsibility by yourself.
Wow.
Because later on in the life, you're going to go out into the world, into the big wide world. So you got to take the responsibility yourselves and do your things by yourself. And that is why I want you to take charge of this thing. So each person is sort of responsible for themselves. But something like if you need to go to the city, which Swami very clearly stated, you don't need to go to the city every day. Why? What's the purpose in going into city? You're not sort of street dogs going from here and there for no purpose. There must be a purpose. Say, occasionally you may need a special book that you need to buy for your course. Or you need to buy something else, well, probably clothing or something like that. Go, by all means. But do let Naveen know about it, that where you are going. So at least there is a roll count. We know exactly where whoever is gone. And that is how. So it's more like a designate warden position I was given.
Mm-hmm.
That is how it started. And hostel, I'll give you, I don't know what Swami gave us, was 2,000 rupees or so. Those days it was a big amount. I'll give you this money. Go by, tomorrow go, Naveen, and a couple of others, go down to city. go and buy these provisions.
In those days, Whitefield was really outskirts of the city, isn't
very.
It?
And you could hardly find a bus or transport getting to the city. The best thing to do was jump onto the train that was coming from Madras going into Bangalore city, the local train basically. Or occasionally you would get a bus that is passing through near Brindavan going to Bangalore city. We would take those buses to get into the Bangalore city. And Swami gave us some rupees to buy this provision. So the first amount for the hostel was actually put in by Bhagwan himself. And Swami says, look, I'm putting this money for you. But from now on, I can give you all the money you want. You know, I can feed you, no problem. But as I said, I want you people to take responsibility of your own lives. So in other words, you need to learn about economics of it as well. You run the hostel the way you want to run it. I'll get two cooks employed for you. And Swami brought two cooks. Mm-hmm. And he was paying the money, salary for the cooks himself. Mm-hmm. He said, all you need to buy is provision and manage. So at least you learn the economics of life. But I can feed you, no problem. Swami is so gracious and he's so flexible. Mm-hmm. You know, one has got to be in his company to imbibe all this beautiful effulgence, lovely joy from Swami. And we went and bought all these provisions. Swami came and checked all this provision when we brought in bags of rice and you name it. Everything was there. And then the cooks were there, the food was prepared, and what happens is Swami goes and checks the food. So the cooks had to be very particular of every item that they made. The kitchen had to be perfect, very clean and all that. And all the items had to be very clean. The kitchen, the facilities, everything had to be very clean. So Swami would walk in at any time. And as I said, Swami would come straight to the hostel every time he was there. And he used to spend a lot of times away from Prashanti coming to Bangalore just because the hostel was there.
Mm.
So that was wonderful for us. We loved it. But the downside of this was that devotees who used to come for Swami's darshan, they would sit there under this big banyan tree where the Sairam shed was, the old days. And they would wait for Swami for darshan. And Swami would come very quickly past them, straight to where the hostel boys are. He would come straight upstairs into the dormitory and talk to us for hours. So, I'm sorry to say this, but the devotees started cursing us. They said, oh no, not these boys again. That's why Swami keeps going to them and, you know, we are losing out for our darshan. Don't even get an interview or anything like that. So, not even a few words with Swami. So they used to curse us for that, see. But this is God's way, so. Anyway, Swami used to check the food as well. So everything had to be meticulously prepared. And Swami said, oh, it smells nice, you know. I'm going to have a meal with you today. Oh. Dinner with you. Now, can you imagine, brothers and sisters, God himself turns up and says, I'm going to have a meal with you. You're not prepared anything special for anybody. And he wants to have a meal with you. What more can he ask? This is why we had bought a plate, silver plate, and glass tumblers and spoons and everything, silver, just for Swami. Because what we had was little Hildalium aluminium plates or something like that. Those days we didn't have any posh things with us. So we bought those things. That is how we used to serve Swami. And the way Swami would act is that he would make sure everybody is served properly. Then he would sit down on the table and then he starts eating with us. He said, come on, start. We didn't have food prayers or anything like that those days. So, you know, this is different dimension to Swami. And then Swami would very quickly eat a few morsels of the food and then walk straight to us and tell the cook, oh, he needs to be served a bit more rice or some more curry here. And all that sort of thing. He would check everybody's fed very well. And then, so, you know, you have called this guest to your house. the guest, i.e. Swami, then tells her, food was nice, wasn't it? Yes. Yeah, tomorrow I'm inviting you all to my house. Oh. Now, can you imagine? Vrindavan in the bungalow and Swami is inviting you there just because the guest, Bhagavan himself, has had a meal with you. So in return he is asking you to go to his house and have a meal at his house. You know, such, this is Krishna in the present avatar.
Yes.
So next day, we would have a meal with him. And he would prepare some lavish dishes for us.
Mm.
Some vegetable kurma. And I tell you, those tastes, I still feel I've never had it before. I've tested thousands of different kinds of tastes. But one that Swami used to get for us, especially the kurma, I can never forget it. And then different dishes, sweets as well. And he would feed us so much. I said, oh, you're not eating very well. No, you must be fed well. And he would put more. Oh, yes, you Gujarati boys, you know, Navin Patel and, you know, Anup Shah. Oh, you people like sweets a lot. Yeah, give him more sweets. You eat more. Then he himself would serve us.
Wow.
So, this is our God. Such loving. Coming back to the college, he told me to take up these courses, of course. But in between, even when the college is working, we would, before I go to that point, let me come back to the hostel again. Our Swami is so adaptable and so easy to work with. Initially, in the hostel, as I said, we didn't have any food prayers or anything like that. So Swami sat with us that first few days and said, so you will be in the hostel. What will you be doing the whole day and evenings and nights? So Swami, don't know. You know, all of us just put our heads up and didn't know what we were going to do. Swami says, can I suggest something? Oh, do you want to do Suprabhatam in the morning? You know, Prachandiniam, they do Suprabhatam. But Bangalore is very cold. Those days, Vrindavan was very cold. The dormitory that we had tin roof, corrugated roof over this. This dormitory came over top of the three garages that Swami's cars were parked in. Above these garages, this dormitory was created with 24 little squares for us. And the roof of this dormitory had corrugated iron sheets, metal sheets. Winter time, it used to get so cold that the boys who were sleeping underneath this in the dormitory, because of their breathing, the vapor would freeze on top of the corrugated sheets and would fall like ice cold icicles on top of them.
Oh my God.
That cold, that is how Bangalore used to be.
Oh my God.
And Swami said, Bangalore is very cold, so what I suggest is, you don't have to get up very early in the morning, 4:30, something like that. Get up at about 5 o'clock or 5:10. Then you don't have to go and wash yourself. Sit in your bed itself and then start doing the 21 times Omkar. This is Swami's own instructions. We were just waiting for this thing, you know, who would not? And so I said, do 21 Omkars. Can you do that? Yeah. As if, you know, he's asking permission from us. The Almighty God is asking permission from us. And we just keep quiet. Yes, Swami, 21 Omkars. After that, do Suprabhatam. Once the Suprabhatam is done, that will take you about 20 minutes or so. 20, 25 minutes. Then you sit in that position for about 10 minutes or so. After that, go out of the hostel and run for 2 miles down that Whitefield Road towards the river. There is a Beltur River just near where the stud farm is. It says run up to that point. And if you want to sit on that bridge, do sit by all means for a few minutes. And then come running back and straight into the showers. Dear brothers and sisters, those days we didn't have any hot water. We used to we used to have only cold water, cold taps in the shower also. And Swami says, I promise you, all of you, you 12 boys, do this. After coming back, running from this exercise that you've done, straight into the shower, you'll feel the shock of the ice-cold water, but you will never feel ill after that. And we, none of us ever felt ill. Swami's instructions followed to the letter, and everything was perfect.
So all of you used to run in the morning?
Yes.
Wow.
All of us used to run. And Swami says, you know, you want to go and sit on that bridge? By all means, sit there. I mean, Swami's instructions were so specific. Where to go, where to sit, what distance to run, and how to come back. And straight into the shower, you will not feel cold. First, you get the shock of that cold water, and then you're fine. You love the water after that. And you have wonderful, refreshing water shower. And then, after that, the breakfast will still not be ready till about 8 o'clock or so, 7:30 or 8 o'clock, something like that. So what I suggest is that just take your books, and no talking to anybody. Just take your books. Vrindavan is big enough. There's beautiful gardens there. Take your book, walk around with a book, read a chapter or two of what you're going to study today, because our college used to start at 10 o'clock or so.
Mm-hmm.
Just browse through what you're going to study, not deeply study those topics, because the lecturer will lecture on that. So at least you are in par with what is being discussed. Later on, at 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock when your lunch breaks, come back to the hostel, have your lunch, and then in the afternoon you may have classes or something like that, practicals or whatever it is. Attend those. But by 4 o'clock you will be done. Come back, have a cup of tea or coffee. And Swami has made all these arrangements for us. Tea, coffee, Swami is very particular about when you eat, what you eat, and all that sort of thing. And breakfast, this sort of breakfast, you know, idli, dosas, and all that sort of thing for us. And then in the afternoon, tea. Oh, you must have a bit of nasta, i.e. a bit of snacks. So, you know, the cooks were told to prepare a bit of savory snacks for us. And we used to have that with tea or coffee that we had. And then it says, after that, you still got spare time. The lunch, the dinner will be served later. It was 6:30 or so. Take your books and just browse through the topics that has been covered during the daytime in your lectures. Come back. You have the bhajans at 6:30 or something like 6 o'clock or so for about half an hour, 1 hour. Bhajans. We didn't have all these harmoniums and everything. We got a little shruti box and a bit of dholki or something like that, a bit of small drum-like thing. And we used to play that. And we didn't have a high-caliber instrument players or singers either. What we sing, you know, it's more like bathroom singers who then grew up into fantastic singers. And we used to have bhajans before the dinner, and then later on have the dinner, and then again back to a bit of reading before going to bed. And he says, I promise you, the formula for you to pass the exam is not at the 11th hour, go and burn the midnight lamp, as people do, and cram everything in your brain or in your mind, and then vomit it out. This is Swami's own words. Vomit it in the exam hall with whatever you have read for that last 11th hour. If you do the formula that I've given you, study a bit in the morning, evening, just browse through those topics, and later on come to very close to the examination, just browse through little notes that you made, and you will pass through, I promise you, and you will never fail. You'll pass through. And you won't believe this. This formula is perfect. At least for me. And everybody else who was with my batch, they found the same thing. That doing what Swami said, you can never fail. And that is how it was. Swami, when he utters a word, it is a gem. You must not lose that. If you lose it, you lose your life. And whatever you stated, you do it and you will be perfect. And none of us failed.
In fact, some of the students did extremely well, isn't it?
Very, very. And they didn't have to study for hours together. I mean, I'm sure Kiran has narrated this example of his, where he did the practical, physics practical, just a light source where he was supposed to align something in this light practical, Lambert-Beer's laws, I think. And for some reason, he was too proud. He said, "Oh, I can sail through this," and he completely failed to get his answers correct because he was arrogant at that time. And then could not make it, so he left the paper blank and walked out of the examination hall. And the external examiner was shocked. He said, "This boy hasn't written anything," and they all have said that he's one of the best ones. So how come he isn't done it? Call him back. Let him write a few things. So he gave him about half an hour or so. He came back, prayed to Swami, and set the exam and the practical, and worked everything perfect. Wrote it down within half an hour. Resubmitted the paper, and the examiner said that I've never in his whatever 20 years of career or whatever it is. Never allowed anybody to do that. And here, for some reason, he has allowed this boy to do this. And this boy has excelled. So, you know, how Swami's ways work, who knows, you know. If you're arrogant and that sort of thing, you will fail.
Swami's constantly teaching those. He's always safeguarding you, but he's all the time ensuring that you learn those vital lessons
yes,
of life.
Yes. By the way, we didn't have any food prayers or anything like that those days. We didn't have Vedic chanting either. A few times Swami did say, "Oh, Vedic chanting is not for you boys. For you Africa boys, you know, you don't learn these sort of things. You don't know how to speak Hindi or Sanskrit or anything like that. So, forget it. Not for you." But some of the hostel boys, they came from this background where the parents and from background that they came from, they used to chant this sort of sloka Vedic chanting at home. But they never uttered any words like that, but they used to silently work on that sort of thing, so they knew it. But how Swami, you know, is so flexible. Like recently I heard an incident where you know, Swami invites guests. And, of course, we were invited like that by Swami. And before, and these days, everybody does a prayer before they start eating. So the guests, these two guests, there were quite a few others as well. These two guests, they were served all the food. So this is, as soon as they were served, they started eating. They totally forgot about these food prayers. And everybody started looking at each other, saying, "What's going on now?" And Swami said, "Today, no food prayers, just start eating." You know how flexible Swami is. Could see that if he said, "No, okay, let's start with food prayers," how would these two people who started eating before the food prayers feel? You know, very hurt. Mm-hmm. They would be feeling very hurt. Instead, Swami turned around and said, "No food prayers today, start eating." So, you know, our God is most flexible. You know.
Amazing. But I think as you said, you know, it was sort of recreating the Vrindavan of the Dwapara Yuga.
Yes. Definitely. And Swami right in the beginning, you know, when he used to come to the hostel, he said, "I want this project in a way to work like the present Gurukula system." In the olden days there was Gurukula system, but the children used to go to the Gurukul in a forest or wherever it is, and there was the Rishi Muni who would teach them the basics of life and all that sort of thing. And here you are going to learn the same thing, but in a different way, in the modern way. And this is how Swami wanted us to do. Be self-sufficient, even our mess bill was to be in that way. The place had to be cleaned by ourselves. All those things had to be done by ourselves. how to manage our funds by ourselves. All that sort of thing. It is just a steep learning curve for us. Which is good. You need that sort of thing in life. Rather than getting lost when you are in this big, wide world. When you are thrown at a deep end, you would probably make big mistakes. Rather than make small mistakes earlier and learn about it. So later in life, it becomes easier for you.
I think that practice still continues in Swami's hostel. All the activities are done by the boys.
Yes.
Be it electric maintenance, be it gardening, be it looking after managing the kitchen, be it looking after the cleanliness, looking after the PA system, looking after...
The Gokulam.
The Gokulam, yeah. Please talk about it.
Later on in life, in our years, the Gokulam also came into our life. But it was very early stages. So, unlike now where boys are assigned to that. Here, a couple of boys used to do that and we used to go randomly to the cow shed that we had, which was behind the bungalow. So we had few cattle there. And we used to look after that, but mainly there were paid people who used to do that, but we used to just oversee a few things. Because some of the boys came from villages, they knew more of that. So somebody like me, who didn't have a clue of what was going on there, kept well away from there because I had better things to do, probably. I don't know. It was for us a lesson in life. Now, talking about the hostel life, of course, we followed that to the strict discipline. But as I said, you know, Swami is not a disciplinarian as such. Oh, one day you forgot to get up or you didn't do the morning suprabhatam and fell asleep. It doesn't matter. They're kids, you know. Swami is that flexible, as I said. Swami is not really bothered. But it is, in a way, trying to inculcate some sort of discipline in your life. That is very important in anybody's life, any walk of life. If you want to succeed in life, you need to have some certain discipline in your life. And that is what Swami was trying to inculcate into us. And later in the life, I do realize that that was the main purpose behind Swami doing this sort of thing. So Swami could have left us to sort of fend for ourselves and put a warden there and, you know, have nothing to do with us still. Life would continue just like any other hostel. It does work. But here, Swami's hostels are very different in that way. Nobody quarrels with anybody. In other hostels, there is ragging going on and all that sort of thing, I heard. I've known people doing that in the other hostels. But in Satisa hostel, nothing like that. So the psychologists, in about 1972 or so, Bangalore University. I mean, every year, Bangalore University used to have a student strike, especially near the exam time. I don't know whether that was the reason why they didn't want to attend the exams or what. But come to Sathya Sai College? No! There is no strike or anything like that. Our teachers, our lecturers used to come from Bangalore. All these lecturers that we had. A couple of them used to stay in Kadugodi, just behind. Nobody in the hostel there. And all of them were from the city or from the villages nearby. And they used to reside there. But we never had a strike. And one day it so happened that the Bangalore contingency's university students came to Brindavan to ensure that we also followed the students' disciplinary strike.
Mm-hmm.
They were thrown out.
Oh.
they saw themselves into a very little minority and they were thrown out. Since then we have never had hassles from anybody. We never had any strikes anywhere. Because as Swami put it, you know, your parents have sent you to me to study, not to do strikes, not to waste your parents' money. By doing strikes, you're actually not studying. You're wasting parents' money. They earned very hard money just to put you into colleges. So why waste the money that is not yours? You're wasting your parents' money. So how? See, distant thinking, Swamiji is. You know, he thinks for everybody around you, not just about you, your parents, your grandparents, everybody, and your locality from where you came from. All that is affected. So Swami is very particular about it. So in the Satya Sai universities, colleges or universities, we never had a strike. Even though Bangalore University or the whole of the Bangalore would be burned, you know, total stoppage. Buses would be stopped. Buses would be burnt. But our college would be working. As though nothing has happened.
Officially affiliated to the Bangalore University.
We were at that time. And later on when the Satya Sai Institute of High Learning came up, the campus came up in Shantinilam, then our affiliation from the Bangalore University got cut off, severed to our own university. Part of that campus was Brindavan, and of course Shantinilam, and the ladies' campus was the Anantapur campus. So that is how the campuses came up. But it is so interesting that how Swami has put the onus straight onto you, that you are the number one. You look after yourself, and the rest of it, God will take care of it. Many times, just incidental things. You know, this is it's experiences that I can never forget. Bhagwan used to stay in Vrindavan, as I said, you know, more often than ever before, because of the college and the hostel. Most of the students were day scholars from around the villages and city of Bangalore, while, as I said, only 12 boys were in the hostel. And they were doing different courses. Some of them were doing BSc, some of them BA, BCom, or BSc. They may be different kind of subjects like physics, chemistry, mathematics, that sort of thing. They would be studying. We, on Thursdays morning, first lecture used to be moral education. That's how it was worded. Moral education. Where we had, on the world religion or Gita or that sort of thing. We had speakers from that. And then many times Swami would address us. How wonderful, you know. Or we had very eminent speakers. We say Swami's. Has got in his fold some very top class speakers from Bharatiya Vidya Bhavan, you name it. So he's got everybody from every corner of the world. And they used to address us. Swami used to address us quite regularly. And it used to be wonderful. Now, one instance that comes to my mind is this thing. An examination time. We had this big lecture hall, and it is still there, in Vrindavan. And the chairs were set, we were all in the examination hall. I was sitting on my table, writing my exam paper, and suddenly, we were all silently writing away. And suddenly I felt kick on my chair from the back. I turned around. Swami. Who is it, Swami? He's observing what I'm writing in the paper.
Oh my God.
How much, you know, this divinity can get so close to you? And he's observing what I'm writing. He's reading what I'm writing there. And then, you know, the answers that I've given, continue writing. I nearly got up and some said, no, sit down. Continued writing and then just checked out a few things and then went away to the next room. So it's lovely that divinity himself comes and takes interest in what you're doing, how your exam papers are going. So those days we had an open invitation, go to Bhagwan in the bungalow anytime, anywhere. And we used to just walk in anytime. And those days, the student power, sorry to say this, but you know, student power, the 12 student power was phenomenally powerful. The lecturers would not stand in front of us, you know. If we walked into the classroom late, they would not dare question us why we were late.
Oh.
So it's a very dangerous situation. I'm sorry to admit to this thing, but especially somebody like Navin Patel would walk in late because maybe I'm busy with, you know, doing something for Swami, or Swami has kept me busy with something, and that's why I'm late coming back to the lectures. So I just walk in, sit down, and nobody could question me. That's how it was, you know. How? Where this power?
Well, then God is by your side.
So that's why even the lecturers would not dare complain about us. Our principal used to be one, Mr. D. Narendra. Wonderful person, wonderful personality. And very humble person. He also knew that the students, you can never, these 12 boys, they were Swami's gems. Don't touch them, don't say anything to them. So leave them alone. That sort of thing, you know, the lecturers would not dare say anything.
Tune in to Sai.
Spend the day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.